All right, dude. So, I'm starting to realize that a lot of the thought patterns that I've had for seemingly my entire life are starting to run out of energy. The reason I think this is because they're starting to attach themselves to like more and more ridiculous situations that totally don't warrant the emotional reaction that they tend to cause in me. And I'm back in therapy, and one of the things that my therapist and I have been talking about is how the trauma of the trial, going to trial when I was 11, affected me. It's been really trippy getting into the actual impact that that had on me, like telling my truth, speaking my truth, and having it be ruthlessly questioned and picked apart by essentially a professional child manipulator, being the defense attorney in the trial, and having to recount all of these instances of the molestation and, who was over that night, how long did it last for, like the every detail imaginable I had to recount on the stand as an 11-year-old in front of this whole courtroom and like, the jury and the attorneys and the judge and just the people who were just there. Also, it was open to the public, so like anyone could be there, which is crazy. But I guess before I went back to therapy, I'd always assumed that most of the trauma came from the actual physical molestation. And while that was super traumatic, I'm starting to really come to terms with the fact that a lot of my psyche and defense mechanisms or thought patterns that I picked up were like a result of that experience. I notice it now where when I say something that is not true unintentionally, like I try to tell the truth always, but whenever I say something like I mess up or say something that isn't totally right, I get very worried. And it's almost like I'm going through life anticipating the world reacting to me being myself in a way that's like, prove it. Prove that that's what you mean. Prove that that's how you feel. Prove that you don't have a reason to hang out with me right now. That was a big thing when I was a kid. It's like, I had a lot of friends and a lot of people wanted to hang out with me. And this is all around the time of the trial. I felt like if I didn't have a reason why I couldn't hang out with somebody, then if I didn't hang out with them, that they would hate me and be mad at me and not want to be my friend anymore. And I don't know if I talked about this before, but because the guy who molested me did not get convicted, he was just like around town. So there was like this war going on between my family and his family in my head, and we needed to have like everybody on our side, otherwise we would be in danger. So on top of this worry of like people being mad at me for not having a valid reason to hang out or not wanting to hang out is this like primal survival worry to really, I must have a reason why I can't do this thing with you. Otherwise, my family will be in danger. So with therapy, it's like diving more into these thought processes and figuring out why I behave the way that I do and getting to the emotional roots of these tendencies and then trying to release them as much as possible. Feel the emotion that I didn't allow myself to feel. And it's like obviously this logic that I had when I was a kid, like it's not applicable anymore in terms of the worry about not having enough people on our side in terms of this family war. But sometimes the tendencies still remain. It's like even when you are in a different scenario, the emotions, if left undealt with, still are there. In the moment, it's sometimes hard to step out of it, even when you are aware. My whole life, I put so much weight on making sure that people like me. And it's almost like people pleasing is a defense mechanism, not just to get people to like me, but to make me feel safe. So, trying to let go of that as much as possible. Anyway, this really epic sequence of events happened these last couple of days. On Friday, some friends and I went to this bar in Venice called Winston House, and it's this sick bar, and a girl from my high school, Issa, shout out to Issa. I don't know if you listen to this, but if you do, thank you for hooking us up. She's so nice, and she introduced us to like all the other staff members, and everyone's so cool there. And they just like let us walk into the bar. That's like a huge, it's an incredibly popular bar, and they let us just cruise in like whenever we show up, and it feels so cool. So we go there all the time. I was there with a couple of my friends, and they have like a dance floor with a DJ, and then this like upper level where you can look out over the balcony and you can see the whole dance floor, and another section where they have dining. And we were there on Friday night, and there was a band playing, and I was dancing with my friends, and I remember looking up and being like, oh, like, is that Quinn 92? Who, if you don't know him, he's like this really dope singer who I've listened to for many, many years. I hadn't seen him in person since I saw him like in 2017. And then at the end of the song, the band leader or whoever was like, give it up for Quinn 92. And I was like, oh shit, it is Quinn. So I started like, you know, just so stoked. Filmed him a decent amount. And he's doing covers, and he's reading off lyrics on his phone for songs. Like, he was singing Valerie. I'll play the clip. Won't you come on over? Stop making a fool out of me. Won't you come on over? Valerie. Valerie. He was playing for a little while, and two of my friends, Michael and Ryan, were sitting in like the dining area, and they were just having a chat. So I went over to them to tell them. I was like, yo, guys, like, this guy Quinn 92 is playing, and they didn't know who he was. But I was like, oh, I'm like a huge fan of him. I'd never seen him live before, and he's just so sick. Like, you guys should come check him out. And they were like, yeah, we will, for sure. So they kept chatting, and which is fine. I think they came over eventually, but I was just like so stoked. And I went back over to my other friends who were on the dance floor listening, and he finished the set. The band was still playing. Quinn was not a part of this band. He was just singing with them for the night for a couple of songs, I guess. Anyway, I go back over to Ryan and Michael a little bit later, and we get up. Michael stays with his girlfriend, and Ryan and I walk over to the dance floor. And as we're walking over, I see Quinn standing there talking to two girls, and I'm like, oh shit, like, he's real. He's standing right there. This is so tight. And I'm like, all right, be cool, man. Like, don't be weird about this. Like, just wait for him. Don't interrupt. He's clearly talking to people. Like, just wait, hang out nearby or whatever. And so eventually he turned around from the girls, and I was just standing there, and I was like, hey, Quinn, you know, what's up, man? Like, I'm such a huge fan. Like, I love your stuff. And he was so nice and so engaging. And he was like, oh, thank you, dude. Like, where are you from? And I told him I'm from Seattle. And he said he played the Showbox. And we were just, you know, having a nice chat. And then at one point I went, dude, like, I saw you live in Brooklyn in 2017. And you were so good. And you were even better today. And it was just, I'm so, like, happy to see you. And he was like, yeah, thank you, man. Like, just very appreciative of what I was saying. And I asked him, are you going to be playing here anytime soon? And he was like, yeah, I'm playing on Monday. Like, you should come through. And I was like, great. So then I asked him for a photo, and we took a picture together, and then he walked off. And then Ryan had been like standing there watching this interaction very close by. And obviously, you know, he didn't know Quinn, so he didn't like, so he just kind of stood there, but he heard the whole interaction. And then he and I went back onto the dance floor, and we're dancing, and like immediately I realized that the concert that I told Quinn I had seen him at was in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, not Brooklyn. And my brain in that moment was like, no, like, you fucked it up. How did you? Now he thinks he's mad at you. He thinks you're a fake fan. We had this incredibly positive interaction. And now, because I got one detail wrong, also the Lower East Side in Brooklyn are so close. But in my head, I'm like, he thinks that I just made this up. There's a hole in my story that I think that he just identified and now is saying, and now hates me for it, or I screwed up somehow. My truth is being questioned. I'm a fake fan. Like, he's just walking over to his wife was in the corner and watching the show, and so he was walking over to her, and I'm assuming that he just went over to her and was like, I just met this fucking another fake fan, another piece of shit fan who told me that they love my stuff and then just lied about having seen me live because he wanted to come off as a true fan. He's not a true fan. Just insane projection. And again, it's so intertwined with the trial where I'm just assuming that the reaction to me getting something wrong or saying something wrong in a story is going to be this like intense questioning that could result in real danger. And so all of a sudden I'm like talking to Ryan and I'm like, fuck, dude, like I just fucked this up. And Ryan, who's very familiar, I've talked about him on this podcast before, and he's like super familiar with my brain and how my brain works. And he was just like, dude, like, that's not, you're fine. It's so okay. Like, he's not, and I had a conversation with my mom on the phone the other day about this kind of stuff. And she made a great point that was like, your friends are not in any mood to attack your truth in the way that you're worried they are. People aren't sitting on the edge of their seats waiting to be like, gotcha. Certainly not strangers. It's especially not people that you just spent 5 minutes complimenting, like Quinn. And so, you know, that was really reassuring. And then Ryan reassured me in the moment. And again, like, I'm aware of these thought patterns and I'm aware of the absurdity of them. And yet it still happens sometimes. But the emotional reaction that I had to that was so ridiculously extreme for the amount of weight that it actually carried. Even if all of that was true, you know, I'll probably never see Quinn again. And if he is the type of person that's like, fuck you, you piece of shit for lying about where you saw me perform, like, whew, maybe we shouldn't interact again anyway. But it's really just, it's a clear, like, lack of safety that I'm feeling. It's basically like almost, I guess, my whole life, maybe just since the trial, I felt like I've been on trial with the world or just everyone that I happen to be interacting with, my friends. I feel like I need to justify every step that I take or decision that I make. I feel like I'm trying to convince everyone of everything, in the same way that I was trying to convince the jury and the people in the trial that I was telling the truth. I wonder if I would have felt differently if he had been convicted. I wonder if I would not worry so much about this. I don't know, but he didn't, and this is where we're at, so this is what we're dealing with. Anyway, it's all good. So Ryan reassured me of that. And then just to, again, highlight the absurdity of my thinking, what then happened was I was like, oh, shit. When I first went over to Ryan and Michael and was like, guys, Quinn92's playing. Like, I love this guy. I've never seen him live before. That's what I said to them because I had forgotten that I had seen him live in the Lower East Side. And so where my brain went immediately was like, oh, shit. These, my two of my best friends now think that I just lied to them, or at least Ryan. I guess Michael didn't see the interaction with Quinn, but Ryan, who, assuming once again that he was paying perfect attention to what I was saying, so much so that he drew the conclusion that earlier, 20 minutes ago, I had said that I'd never seen him live, but now, to Quinn's face, I'm saying that I saw him live in Brooklyn. I assume that Ryan's like, oh, liar, see? I knew it. All of a sudden, like, this person who's reassuring me about why I don't need to worry about what Quinn thinks, now I'm worried about what Ryan thinks. The guy who just told me not to worry, I now have created a reason to think that he thinks that I'm lying. I guess it's because it was such a intense, like, incredibly embarrassing thing to talk about with the trial. And I guess I feel like, I always felt like, if people didn't believe me, then that meant that they thought that I was lying. And like, why would you think that I want people to think that that happened? I don't want you to think that my best friend's dad molested me for 2 years. And there's nothing that he could do to me that would make me want you to think that, other than molesting me. It made me question my own, like, trust in my truth. So much so that now, whenever my truth comes into question, I get so paranoid about the world's reactions to it that I feel the need to fix it before anything goes wrong. So in the same way that when I was talking to Ryan and I was like, what's my plan? Am I going to go now interrupt this conversation with Quinn and his wife to say, hey, just so you know, bro, I it was the Lower East Side. It wasn't Brooklyn. I'm also assuming that he hasn't performed in Brooklyn. Now, assuming that he remembers the exact show that I'm talking about 5 years ago when he's a touring musician. And, you know, sometimes when we actually look at the solutions to the anxieties that we're having, what would be the hypothetical solutions? It's like so absurd. And if we know that the solution is absurd and we're not going to do anything about it, certainly we can let it go. But I didn't feel like that in the moment. So Ryan calmed me down, and then I freaked out, realizing that Ryan now had a reason to think that I was lying even more intensely than Quinn did, when in reality, I just had forgotten that I had seen him live until I was talking to him. And then I remembered, but I didn't remember it correctly. In the same way with the trial, like, a lot of the things, when you're being asked about every molestation incident that occurred over a 2-year time frame, you get confused. And when there's somebody whose entire job is to point out the flaws in your story or the confusion that you're having, or how this time you said it went on for 10 seconds, but this time now you're saying that it went on for 15 seconds. Literally, that was the level of questioning. Anyway, so I started joking with Ryan immediately about that, and he started laughing about it too. And we both very quickly realized that everything's fine. This doesn't need to be something that ruins my night, our night. He loves me regardless of whether or not I forgot about the one time that I saw Quinn live 5 years ago. And it's like, it's coming to terms with that. And in the same way that my mom said, it's like, you know, you're not on trial. And my therapist gave me a really good line where she was saying that your truth, you trust your truth and it's your protector. It's essential that you tell it. You don't need to question it. And I hadn't really thought about truth being like a protector until that moment. And I realized, like, if I hadn't told the truth, I would have never maybe gotten out of the whole situation with the molestation. Obviously, telling the truth then caused me to go to trial, but the alternative was certainly much worse. So I'm trying to cultivate a sense of trust in my truth more and more. And the rest of the night was great. We just danced so hard all night. And I was with a bunch of people that I love. And it was so good. And so then Quinn was performing. I don't know if I forget if I said this, but he said, I asked Quinn if he was going to perform anytime soon. And he was like, yeah, like, I'm performing here at Winston House on Monday, which was yesterday. And he was like, yeah, come through. So I looked up the event online, and it was for this foundation, this animal shelter foundation. And the tickets were, like, pretty expensive, but it came with dinner and an open bar. And so I decided, I was like, yeah, I mean, I'll try to go. And so this girl that I've been seeing, we've been on a couple of dates, and she was just getting back from a trip. And she was like, hey, what's your schedule like this week? And I told her I was free on Monday. And I asked her if she liked Quinn, and she was like, yeah, for sure. So we got two tickets, and we decided to go. And it was like cocktail attire, so we were, like, dressed up in a suit and a dress. And we got there. It started at 6, and we got there, like, right at 6. Like, we were, I think, the first people there, aside from the photographers and the people that were running the event. I'm pretty sure we were the first people there. And we walked in, and right away, this older lady greeted us, and she was like, hey, I forget her first name, but I'm Mrs. LaBelle. And that was the name of the foundation. And she introduced herself, and we said hello, and she was like, thanks for coming. Very brief interaction. And then we sat down at one of the booths and just had this incredible chat. We were talking you know, I feel like when you get into energy and spirituality, just this kind of stuff, the synchronicities, the things that we talk about on this podcast, once you start getting into this kind of stuff, it's hard to stop talking about it. And it's not that you have to talk about it all the time, but I find that especially with dating, it's like I'm definitely interested in somebody who's interested in this kind of stuff. So it was kind of both of our first times like really getting into these topics, and we were talking about reincarnation and vibrations, and all, it was such a great conversation that we were having. And it felt like we were both super present with each other and very engaged. And as this is going on, yeah, it's funny. We were just sitting in this booth, and it was funny. Like they had so many photographers at this event, and they would all come by with these sick cameras and take photos of us. And we were just sitting there, like not a part of this foundation at all, but just here to see Quinn. But it was so good. And then it felt like we were vibrating very high. It felt like we were having such a fun time and just like really, you know, grateful to be there with each other and all the people that were at this event. So we were kind of in our own little world in this booth, and the waiters were coming by bringing hors d'oeuvres and these really dank treats. And then at one point I recognized one of the photographers, who was a friend of mine whose boyfriend used to film videos of me and my friend Richie. So I hadn't seen them since literally Richie's birthday, which was, I think, in like November, or I forget when it was, but it was a long time ago. And I saw her, and we gave each other a big hug, and we were all chatting, and she was so warm and bubbly and friendly. And she's always been that way, but just particularly in that moment. And she invited me and the girl that I was with, Galen, to her boyfriend's surprise birthday party. They were going to Big Bear, which is a mountain in California, a skiing resort. And she was like, "You guys have got to come. Like, you need to come to this event." And we were like, "Okay, that sounds sweet, you know, but it is 5 months away. So, you know, we'll see. But thank you for the invite." She was so friendly and stoked on our interaction that she was like, just without questioning it at all, it seemed, she was like, "You guys should come on this really intimate trip with me and my boyfriend and my boyfriend's close friends." So right away, that's kind of an indicator that I think that you're, you know, people are feeling good being around you when that kind of stuff happens. And even if without that invite, you know, it was a very fun interaction with her. Anyway, yeah, that was cool. And then we went back to the booth, and we were kind of, at this point, it's like very crowded in the bar, and we locked down this booth and we wanted to keep it. And so somebody was doing some stand up right before the musicians went on. And so I heard him over the intercom, and I went to go check it out. And Galen sat in the booth and held down the fort, went and watched this guy's stand up. It was tough crowd. You know, this guy was ripping Michael Vick jokes at an animal rescue foundation fundraiser. I respect it. But yeah, it was tough audience for the jokes. So I watched a little bit of stand up, came back, and on my way back to the booth, I saw Quinn. And at this point, you know, I was like, he was talking with some people again, and for whatever reason, I just decided to not say anything to him. I was like, "I'm just going to keep walking here." And so I walked back to the booth, and I told Galen that I just saw Quinn, and then told her all about the experience that I had with Ryan and Quinn on Friday, and, you know, all the worries of the interpretations, and we were talking about therapy, you know, all this kind of stuff. Eventually, Quinn went on stage. We talked for a while longer, and when we heard him start playing, we went and got like right in the front, and he just crushed. He's so good. Listen to him if you're listening to this. He's really, really dope. And afterwards, he was like the last act, and then a DJ went on after, and we went, the upstairs area all this time had been like fenced off for VIP. So at this point, now that it's like 8:40 and the event's like coming to a close, and so the upstairs was no longer blocked off. And so we went upstairs, and just to check it out, we found a spot to sit overlooking the balcony, and we just sat there and we continued our awesome conversation. And then we, as this is going on, I'm like basically like scanning the dance floor, like trying to see if Quinn's like out there walking around, because I really wanted to interact with him again in a way that like was more authentic to me. Like I felt like when I interacted with him last time, I was, in addition to the worries of the Brooklyn Lower East Side confusion, I felt like I was fanboying so hard that I didn't really, I wasn't that present. I was more like flustered. So I wanted to see him again and just, it was also like, this was his real songs that he was performing this time instead of the covers on Friday. So I just wanted to say how much I liked his set. So I was joking with Galen about this, and then I made the comment that was like, you know, basically like as soon as I stop trying to see this person and forget that I need to see him, as soon as I don't need this to happen, he's just going to like show up right behind me is what I said to her. And she was like, yep, that's how it always works. So we continued our conversation, and the photographer came upstairs, and she came over and said hello to us again and was like, hey, seriously, come to Big Bear. And we were like, we're still down, but quite an invite, you know? Really nice interaction with her. And then one of the waitresses came by, who I know a lot of the people that work at this bar. And this one waitress, she came over and was like, do you guys need anything? And I was like, no, but thank you so much, Leanne, you're the best. And I just totally called her the wrong name. And then I realized right away, I was like, oh my God, I have been calling you Leanne. And she was like, oh no, I'm Brittany. And I was like, oh shoot. And she was so fine with it. We had been having like a really positive, energetic interaction before. And I think that she could tell my intention was like, I still like you even if I got your name wrong. Like you as a being beyond the concept of labels, I really appreciate being around you. And I think that she felt that and felt that way about us, where it didn't seem to matter at all that I had gotten her name wrong. So she was like, no, I'm Brittany. And it was okay. And then she eventually left the conversation. And then she, like 3 minutes later, she comes back with Leanne, who I had also met last weekend, last Friday, actually. And she was like, this is Leanne. And I was like, Leanne. And she was like, hey. And, you know, we obviously recognized each other. But Leanne had this really like super engaged, intense moment where she like looked at me and Galen and was like, if you guys ever need anything, just let us know. If you want to get in, we'll bring you in the back. Like, just, you know, you're a friend of Issa's. Like, we really appreciate you guys. And do you want drinks? Like, she offered us free drinks. Obviously, the bar was open, but at this point, it was closed because the event was ending. So she was just like, what do you guys need? And we were like, nothing at all. But thank you so much. And it was just funny to think of like what would be normally perceived in my head as something so bad as getting somebody's name wrong. Talk about losing a friend and being in danger. Like, oh no, this person thinks that I don't even know who they are. I didn't trip about it at all. And I think it was just because we were feeling good. It wasn't really a worry. Like if Brittany was super offended, I can just tell her like what I just said here, like, this really had nothing to do with your name. I like you a lot. And I'll never get it wrong again. Or maybe I will. I don't know. But it was so funny that she, despite that seemingly negative outcome of that interaction, she then brought over Leanne. And then they both were so nice to us. And it was just such an awesome interaction. And eventually they walked away. And then like 2 minutes later, the lady who put on the foundation came over to us. We hadn't seen her since the beginning. And she like leaned in super close, like very close to me and like looking at Galen. It kind of seemed like she was trying to hook up with us. She totally wasn't. But like it was that level of comfort and familiarity where she was like as if we had been friends or just like way closer than we were. And she was just like, oh, how was your guys' time? You know, she was just chatting us up and we were like, great. It was so good. We're really having a nice time. Thank you. And it was just the three interactions with Jackie, the photographer, Brittany, Leanne, and the Mrs. LaBelle. All three of them were so positive and like no worries at all. It was just so, everyone was so welcoming and it was like excessively positive, if that's a thing. And it just, I don't know, when you start tuning into that kind of stuff and you start being aware of the frequency of positivity that's flowing into your existence, it's like, wow, this is so fun. It feels so good. And so eventually the founder left the conversation and Galen and I were just, you know, joking about all, we were talking about what I'm talking about right now. And just like the frequency of these interactions is so wild. And then at one point, I just like turned around and Quinn is standing right there, like just like 10 feet away from us, talking to some people. And it really was like the moment I wasn't tripping about it. And it's so consistent how often this happens with whatever it is that we're trying to do in life. If you're texting somebody that you're interested in and they haven't responded in a while, it's like the moment you stop worrying about it, their text pops up. As soon as we don't need something, it's like, here, have it. And I guess it's because you're coming, your vibration is, instead of feeling like lack, you're feeling full. You don't need anything to feel the way that you're feeling. Everything's a bonus instead of a necessity to feel good. You feel good regardless of what's happening. And so he was right behind us. And instead of popping up, I didn't even feel the need to talk to him at this point. I mean, I knew that I was going to, but like now it's like, great. Like this is so, I'm just feeling good. And I'm like, what a bonus that Quinn's here now, you know? So we were trying to figure out like, okay, should we like go say what's up? And I remember being like, no, like, let's just wait it out. Like, let's hang out for a little bit. It's okay. When we want to get up, we will. Continued our conversation. And eventually we got up and walked over and tried to be as nonchalant about like waiting to chat with him as possible. Eventually he walked like directly over to us. And I was like, hey man, like, what's up? Good to see you again. And he was like, hey, dude, how are you? He was like, what was your name again? And I was like, Sebastian. And he was like, oh, yeah, from Friday. And I was like, yeah, from Friday, dude. Hell yeah. And he was like, oh, man, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming out. And he was like, are you guys part of this foundation? And I was like, no, you just said that you were playing. So we decided to come. And he was like, oh, that's dope. And I said that it was really sweet seeing him perform his real songs instead of the covers, even though the covers were great. And he was like, yeah, no, the covers sucked. It was, you know, I was reading off of my notes on my phone. And he was, you know, being very, very hard on himself for the covers. And you know, I basically was like, no, dude, like you killed it. Like, yes, you were reading off of your notes, but everyone was just so into it. I have video to prove it. And he was like, no, my wife told me too that it wasn't a very good show and stuff. And I was like, all right, dude, well, I'll send you the videos. Like, I can confirm I was in the audience. It was so good. He was like, thanks, man. And so, and then at one point I was just like, dude, like, I'm really grateful that you exist. And we made eye contact for this in particular. And it just was a super, I don't know. It felt like we just connected, not just from that phrase, but like over the course of the conversation. And I just, in addition to us, the three of us chatting, it was also like, you know, it just felt very present. And then at one point I was like, dude, I love what you do so much. And he looked at me and he was like, thanks, man. I don't really feel worthy of what you're telling me. And I was like, whoa. You know, like, obviously dealt with that feeling so much, especially in therapy. You know, we've been talking about, it's like, I spent so much time trying to convince the world that I was okay, that I wasn't traumatized, that I wasn't the kid that got molested, especially my parents, because I felt like if they thought that I was emotional or affected by this experience negatively, then I felt like they would feel like negative. The worse I felt and the more traumatized I was, the worse they would feel. So it's like managing my own emotions, which is basically just blocking them out completely, while at the same time trying to manage the emotions of everyone around me, and doing that by just trying to be as normal as possible. And to be like successful, and I wanted to be good at things because it felt like that was my way out of the identification of the traumatized kid. And so I was talking to my therapist about this, and I laid all of that out for her, and she was like, yeah, basically what the root of all of that is you're trying to convince yourself and the world that you are still lovable. And I was like, damn. Just broke down immediately, just absolute waterworks. And that was the first conversation that she and I had. That was before we even did an official session. It was just over the phone. And I was like, you're hired so hard. You know, it was a crazy realization for me. You know, that is the root. All of these shameful feelings and embarrassment and guilt and regret, intensely negative feelings that I felt for so long, and worrying about what the world, how everybody would respond to me speaking up about this and not knowing what was going to happen, but being afraid of all of the things that would happen. It felt like, yeah, like I'm not worthy of love. And so now, unlearning these thought patterns and realizing that I am worthy of love. We all are. And there's nothing that we have to do or achieve in order to be worthy of love. And so to hear this guy who, you know, on paper has it all, to hear him be like, I don't really feel worthy of what you're telling me. You know, it's not like a normal thing to say to a fan. And that's what I mean about this interaction being very unique, where he felt like he could share that. I mean, how many times, most of his interactions with people must be just like this, or at least the one that we had on Friday. And I doubt that when people say that they love what he does so much, that he's like, I don't feel worthy of that every time, you know? It felt like we connected. And I was just kind of like, yeah, man, I get that. But like, God, you really are so good and so worthy of this. I just tried to convince him that he was worthy. And, you know, we on Friday, we had established that we both live in Venice. And so at this point in the conversation, he was like, yeah, man, well, this was like really nice chatting. Like, if you want to go grab a drink sometime, let me know. And I was like, what? Yeah, Quinn. Yeah, I would love to do that. Quinn 92, you fucking legend. And it was so wild because it didn't even seem that far-fetched based on the interaction that we had had. It felt like we were friends. It was just like an authenticity connection. Like, I wasn't filtering what I was saying because I was starstruck. I was just like, yo, this really, I really want you to know this. This is how I feel about you. And he felt, you know, vulnerable enough and comfortable enough to say how he felt about receiving that compliment, which was unworthy. So, you know, in retrospect, I guess I should have been like, okay, yeah, man, what's your number? Like, let's do it. That would be great. But I was so... Yeah, I guess part of me was also like, you know, maybe he's just being nice. I don't want to like force it or anything. But then at the same, maybe he's just trying to make me look cool in front of my date. But I didn't do that. And then he was like, all right, I got to go to the bathroom, which is where he had been going in the first place. That's why he walked over to us. We were between where he was at originally in the bathroom. And so we went to the bathroom, and then I was like, should we go to Galen? She was like, yeah, for sure. I'm just thinking about this now as I'm editing it. How classic would it be if he had gone to the bathroom and then came back out, was fully planning on like exchanging information so we could grab this drink, but then we were gone and now he thinks that it was something that he said that caused us to leave and now he's mad at himself. It would just be so standard. I hope that's not what happened. So we walked downstairs and left the bar, and we're just laughing, and just, it was just such a funny thing to recap like the entire sequence of events that then led to this person that I was freaking out about. Are these mad at me? You know, I went from, God, it's just all so significant and purposeful, and it's like even the things that don't feel like they're working out are working out better than we can imagine. There's no version of my like foresight that would have made me think, oh, I'm going to interact with Quinn and it's going to go so well that he's going to like be like, hey, we should hang out sometime and grab a drink. It was not needing anything from him and just wanting him to know genuinely that I really appreciate him without trying to get anything from it, that I think led him to feel like inclined to be like, yeah, man, let's hang out sometime. And in the same way that he fucking popped up in the first place, right behind me, literally verbatim what I had said. It's experiences like that that make me think about like, oh my God, how powerful are we as these human beings? Obviously, I didn't like dictate Quinn walking up the stairs and having all of that happen, but God, it's such an insane coincidence. It's too coincidental to just be coincidence. And even as I'm saying this story now, there's like a part of me that's like, people aren't going to believe this. But Galen was there and she can testify, literally testify. Maybe I should pick a different verb or whatever it would be. Anyway, we had a great rest of the night. And then the next day I was trying to figure out like, okay, what should I say to this guy? Oh, I also forgot that when he recognized me, he was like, oh yeah, from Friday. He was like, I saw your post. Cause I had made the picture that I took of him, of us together on Friday. I put it on my Instagram story and tagged him, and he never like reposted it or anything. It didn't even say that he had seen it, but he told me that he had seen it. So he obviously did, which was so cool. So I guess I was like, all right, well, I know that if I message him, he'll probably see it. So maybe it's not a big deal that we didn't like exchange numbers. Plus, again, there was also this part of me that was like, maybe he was just being nice. But it seems like a wild thing to say to a fan, we should grab drinks sometime, you know, if you don't mean it. But who knows? So I was trying to figure out what to say to him on Instagram. And I woke up this morning and I was like, just so stoked still. But I started noticing that I was like, okay, I'm starting to see the worry set in. Like I'm writing out my message to him in my notes app beforehand, that type of logic, you know, where you're worried about the person that you're texting. So you try to craft it out and make it perfect. It's just so silly. But anyway, I wrote out this like long thing to him. Originally, it was going to be like, I sent him the video from Friday that was him just killing it on stage, and hopefully to alleviate some of the worry that he had about that show. And I'll just read the message. But as I was writing it out, I was trying to think like, okay, what's like the optimal plan of attack here? You know, like, should I just be cool? You know, I don't know. It seemed like I wanted to be as authentic as possible, because I think that's what made him interested in hanging out with me in the first place, was I was just like really meaning what I was saying to him. And so rather than, you know, I played with a couple of ideas of like, okay, you could just be like, hey man, so drinks, you know, or like fucking all sorts of different variations. And I just decided on like, all right, just talk to this person as if he's a person and not this celebrity who you idolize, because he is that. Clearly, despite all of his success, he still feels unworthy. What a trip. And I'm so familiar with that feeling. Like, let me see if I can provide some clarity for this guy. So anyway, here's what I decided on. First thing was the video. I sent him that and I said, hey man, such a standard, incredible show last night. Here's the recording from Friday 2 with everyone just ruthlessly loving it, despite what your wife said. Ha ha. Immediately after I sent this message, I was like, fuck, you shouldn't have roped his wife into it. Even though you guys talked about it, this makes it look like you're like coming between him and his wife or something. You know, it's so funny how pretty much regardless of what you say, once you say it, your brain's like, here's a million things that are wrong with that and why the person that you sent it to now hates you. Despite like, maybe he's like, oh, finally somebody understands, you know, my wife is ruthless. Who knows? That was the first message. Second message, great chatting after the show too. Really appreciate you sharing the lack of worthiness you feel. I felt similarly most of my life, basically until the last 3 months, parentheses, went back to therapy. I need to suffer adequately to receive love, success, happiness type thinking. It's a belief and it's only as strong as we allow it to be. I'm still working on releasing it, but it's a wild feeling to question it and begin to believe that there's nothing you have to do or achieve to be worthy of love. So what I had wished I said to him in that moment, I just said via this message. And then after that, I said, anyway, would love to grab a drink and kick it in Venice sometime. Last night you mentioned that. And in my head now, I'm like, quote, make sure he knows it's completely fine if he doesn't actually want to and was just being nice, end quote. My own internal unworthiness being like, he wouldn't actually say that and mean it, lol. Still working through it clearly. All good though. Maybe people just mean what they say to us and we don't have to panic. No pressure for real, though. Haha, you're the man. Dog, literally, even just reading this right now, I'm like, you fucked this up so bad. Since I sent this message at like 12 something today, and I have thought about it 900 times since then about how you didn't need to say all of this. Why didn't you save this for the interaction that you have in person? Why didn't you play it cool? Why didn't you? Fuck. I don't even know if he's seen it yet. It's crazy how, like, once you send something, there's like a certain amount of time that passes where it's like, oh, now it's bad. You know, before it was like, maybe they just didn't see it. Now it's they saw it and really don't like you for it and you fucked up and it's too late. But I've thought about all these things that I could have done differently and how I should have just been like, hey man, like, awesome time. Would love to still grab drinks sometime if you're down. And just one message. Because I'm also like, this is going to come through to him as like four messages from Sebastian Scales. You know, I'm just going through all of the different reactions that he had to this message, all of which are so negative. And I don't even give him the chance to appreciate me taking the time to try to explain what's helped me with worthiness and how I'm still struggling with it and how he's not alone in these feelings. So I don't know if he'll ever respond, but in the same way that the moment I stopped tripping about it, he popped up into my experience, I imagine the moment I stop worrying about what I said will be the moment that he responds. But regardless of whether or not he responds, like there were so many things that happened because of this guy that just made all of this, like, I hope he reaches out if he would like to. But I would never want him to reach out because he feels obligated to, because he said that he would, or anything like that. And that's what I wanted to convey in this message. Because I also, I guess, believe that my own internal unworthiness of, like, he was probably just saying that. But regardless, it was such an incredible experience and such a fun time. And it was just like example after example of the power of positivity and just being where you are and not feeling like you need anything from anyone. Nothing needs to happen in order for you to feel okay. You feel good, and things that, like, all these interactions that we had, obviously the conversation that we had while we were in the booth, I think it just, like, it just created this, like, energetic vortex, this gravitational pull that people would come into. And when you're hanging out around us, or just people that feel good in general, like, it's hard to not adapt to that. It's hard to not have emotional roll off, or whatever you would call it. It was so good. And I'm just like I'm very grateful for the whole experience, regardless of the outcome. You know, I guess what I regret most about this message is that I sent it and it kind of feels like it was like I was worried about not seeing him again or not interacting with him again, instead of just being like, yeah, let me know if you want to hang out. But I just don't know how it's going to be perceived or ever perceived. Maybe he'll never see it. Maybe it got lost in the flurry of messages. So many people tagged him on Instagram from that show last night. Like, there's such a possibility that he hasn't even seen it. And even if he does see it and doesn't like my response, then that's okay. Maybe this was the extent, maybe this was the significance. It was supposed to be just up until this point. And all the amazing takeaways from it of just like, wow, like, everyone's going through it. No matter what it seems like, no matter how many followers you have, no matter how successful you are, we all have such similar feelings. And you can allow people to open up just by being authentic. And I felt so authentic in that conversation with him. And it felt like he was being so authentic back, and Galen was being authentic. We were all just like happy to be here. Authenticity and truth are so intertwined. They're almost identical, I guess. And it felt like such an authentic moment, and it felt so fucking good. And I wasn't worried. I wasn't worried about how he perceived the interaction at all. I started worrying about it once I sent the message, and then I was like in hypothetical land. But in the moment with him, it felt so good. And with all the people that whole night, maybe we don't have to plan anything out. Maybe we have the answer to everything that we're trying to figure out right now. if we just allow ourselves to be in this moment without putting the veil of thoughts over all of it and reflecting on all the things we should have done differently or what we need to do in the future to fix whatever we think is wrong. Think. We just keep thinking and we don't have to. I didn't feel like I was thinking much during that whole fundraiser. Every now and then some, for sure. But for the most part, I was just like, whoever happened to be in my orbit, it was like, let me just focus on you and just see what happens and just trust. Trust that there's nowhere more important that you could be than where you are right now. It's very freeing to feel that way. And like right now I feel it, you know? I've gotten in my head a little bit about like, okay, you should have been more succinct here and you should have said this there and this should have been funnier or whatever. But like for the most part, I've been pretty present. And it feels so good. When you recognize that you haven't been present, what an opportunity that is. An immediate opportunity to come back to now. Not to feel bad about how long it's been since you've been here. How long, even though you've always been here, how long it's been since you focused on being here, since you experienced being here and not your thoughts about the past or the future. Not regret, not shame or guilt for not spending time here, but just to be aware of the fact that you are here now and you always have been and you always will be. And it's entirely up to you whether or not you want to be aware of that. What an amazing situation that we all have access to. So thanks for tuning in and listening and watching and sharing this moment with me. And I'm grateful to share it with you. And that we can just, it just continues. It's just all of this, everything that we talked about, it just continues. You're always here. God, what a time. Time is not the right word, but what an existence. I appreciate you very much. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.